Hello and welcome to the 11th episode of Season 8 of The Dark Money Files, in which we shine a light into a murky world. I am Ray Blake, and with me is my co-host, friend and business partner, Graham Barrow. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Ray.
Now, Graham, ever since we launched the podcast, which is more than 3 years ago.
3 years? Where did that go, Ray?
Well, technically, Graham, from a physicist's point of view, it didn't go anywhere. It's still there.
Very, very true. Thank you so much for enlightening me. Please.
Yeah.
Please carry on.
Well, I'll do my best. Look, ever since we launched the podcast 3 years ago, we've tended to focus on regulatory actions, stories that arose from whistleblower leaks, and explaining good practice and how to implement it effectively.
And jolly good fun it's been too.
It really has. And yet there is one thing we haven't done yet, which is surprising, as one of the most successful workshops we've ever done was predicated on the idea.
What, the how to be a money launderer one?
Yep, that's the one.
They were good fun to do, weren't they?
They were, and they still would be. If anyone fancies it, we're happy to come and do one for them.
Oh, yes.
They've probably changed more people's perception of why we do this job than anything else.
I think you're right. So are you thinking that we should do a podcast version?
That's exactly what I'm thinking.
It's a good idea, but it's a big subject, Ray.
Well, I agree, but we can always chunk it down into two or three episodes.
Well, we've got three episodes left for this eighth season, so it would make a fitting final trilogy.
Well, the alliteration clinches it for me, Graham. If it alliterates, it must be true. I think that's the rule. Where do you think we should start?
Well, maybe we should start where we used to start, with the workshop, which is a room stuffed full of cash.
Photographically speaking, well, yeah. Of course, we couldn't afford the stage props to do it for real. No. Yeah, it's a fairly famous photo. One of the drawbacks of a podcast is the inability to do visuals. But if you search Google Images with the phrase Mexico Cash Hall, you'll find the photo in question.
You will, and you might want to just manage your history after you've done that search.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. If anyone ever looked at my search history, I could be in significant trouble.
Yeah, let's not go there, Graham.
But Ray, I still think regularly about the reaction we used to get when we put that photo up on the screen. It was amazing.
All the more so when you realise that you're looking at a room full of $100 bills.
Yes. So we have this great big pile of cash. And when I say it's big, it is $207 million. So, Ray, shall we have a go at laundering it?
I'm game. Maybe we could just start paying it in at the bank.
And how much you pay in the US as it's dollars without drawing instant attention to yourself. How much is it you can pay in, Ray, without drawing instant attention to yourself?
$10,000 in one day, Graham.
And why is that, Ray?
Because they've got a thing called a CTR, a cash transaction report, which is automatically triggered at that level.
And we don't want one of those, do we?
Not really, no.
Okay, so let's make that our starting point. Now, Ray, if I start paying in $10,000 a day, how long is it going to take me to empty my room with $207 million in it?
Well, assuming the banks are open roughly 250 days a year, Graham, which is 5 weekdays for 50 weeks, it would take you just under 83 years.
And that's paying in at $10,000 every day the bank's open, 83 years.
Oh, yeah.
By which time, Ray, I will be 152 years old.
Well, I hate to break it to you this way, Graham, but you won't. I think what you meant to say there was, by which time I'll be dead.
Yes, thank you for breaking that to me gently. I'm going to be honest, even someone as naturally optimistic as I am, and I am, I don't think I can hope for quite that much luck.
No, and to be honest, if you walked into the same bank every day for 20,700 days and paid in 10,000 in cash every time, I think even Nat West would notice eventually.
Do you think?
Oh, zing. Well, I would hope so, yes.
All right, that's not going to work, is it?
No, it's not. And that's not unfair to NatWest either. I only mention it because of their recent regulatory censure.
Yeah, it was a cheap shot, but an amusing one.
Well, I enjoyed it. So that isn't going to work. So maybe we should recruit some more people to help us.
Okay, well, how many?
Well, logically, if we recruited 83 at the same rate of $10,000 every day, we could bank it all in a year.
Okay, but hold on a minute, Ray. That would mean 83 people coming to my house every day for 250 days, each of them taking away $10,000 and paying it over the counter into 83 bank accounts.
What's your street parking like, Graham?
it's a permit.
Ah, okay.
And even allowing for that, I can see a whole lot of other issues with that idea.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's 83 more opportunities for a bank, or rather banks, to spot something's up.
Yes, along with the fact that 83 people turning up at my house every day might just get noticed by the neighbours who just twitch the net curtains occasionally. They might get a bit suspicious about that level of activity.
Well, yeah, not to mention the potential for one or more of our cadre of 83 to decide not to pay the money in at all. Or worse, to decide to recruit a few friends of their own, bring them along and help themselves to all of the money and not just the bit they're supposed to be helping you out with.
Yeah, and that sounds a bit terminal from my point of view. But either way, it's a cumbersome way of doing it, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Although, as listeners to our podcast will know, Fowler Oldfield managed to move $265 million in cash in the space of a few years, Graham, across NatWest counters.
Well, yes. Now, that really is a good point, Ray, and one we need to take on board, because if we want to shift our cash, I think we need to look to the world of commerce and not private individuals to launder it for us.
Well, I'm not sure we can expect any bank to be quite so accommodating as NatWest were in that episode, Graham.
Well, you're right, Ray, but we must hope that that was a one-off and they have thoroughly learned that lesson.
I'm sure you're right. But anyway, we don't want to take too many chances with all this money, do we?
No, especially as it isn't ours.
Yeah. Now, I do think we probably need to stop and explain that last sentence.
Oops. Yes. I forgot we haven't done that yet, have we? So for today's episode, we're going to pretend to be what the National Crime Agency here in the UK refer to as high-end money launderers.
Yeah, it sounds great, doesn't it? I'm very excited about this project. In a very interesting document issued by the NCA called High-End Money Laundering Strategy and Action Plan, they point out the ability of criminals to launder large sums of money themselves without attracting attention is limited. Therefore, criminals need someone professional, capable and trustworthy to make the necessary arrangements. Although there are many ways to launder money, it's often the professional enabler who holds the key to the kind of complex processes that can provide the necessary anonymity for the criminal. Professionals such as lawyers, trust and company formation agents, investment bankers and accountants are among those at greatest risk of becoming involved either wittingly or unwittingly.
Oh, it's a great quote, and the word that stands out in that quote to me, Ray, is trustworthy. It doesn't actually sit all that well with a bunch of criminals, does it?
So within the fraternity, some of the most trustworthy people you will ever meet. They have to be because their lives depend on it.
It's a great irony, isn't it? So basically, what we're saying is that money laundering isn't a do-it-yourself exercise here.
Yeah,
villains outsource their money laundering to specialist gangs who do all of this for them on an industrial scale, and they do it for a commission.
Yeah, and with a client list that includes violent organised criminals, let's just say you wouldn't want to be responsible for client complaints.
No. I suspect they're dealt with rather more aggressively than the average bank. So these gangs have an awful lot of criminal money to process, and they need to do it carefully and they need to do it skillfully.
Yeah. Is that why they've brought us on board, Graham?
Do you know, I think we'd be pretty good at it, right?
I mean, it goes without saying, hopefully, that this is in the nature of whimsical fantasy rather than a legal confession.
Yeah, although it would be a brilliant double bluff, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it, though?
But let's stay with the notion that it is fantasy, I think.
Yeah. I think
we don't want blue flashing lights outside our doors anytime soon.
No, not again.
No. It would be for a different offence. No, let's just move on.
Yeah.
So, look, in order to get significant amounts of cash into the system, we will need to access corporate banking because large sums are not considered so suspicious there, as they might, of course, in an account like yours or mine.
Yeah, absolutely. But for our purposes, they can't just be any old business, can they, Graham?
No, Ray, they can't. It is not much use trying to launder a huge load of cash through a business that doesn't traditionally deal in cash.
Yeah, with the exception of the quite obvious exception that we spoke about a couple of weeks ago. We're going to target the restaurants, casinos, taxi companies and others that still have a cash element to their takings, aren't we?
Yes, we are. And there are a couple of ways of going about this. Now, we could start a new business. We could run it, at least in part, legitimately and funnel our dirty money through alongside our clean takings.
Except, Graham, that's hard work. And banks are inherently more suspicious of new businesses than they are of existing, long-established ones.
Very true, Ray. So we could buy out an existing business or two or three or whatever.
But that's going to cost money. That's going to cost some of our hard-earned cash.
Can I just point out, Ray, it wasn't exactly hard-earned.
Well... No, hard, possibly, but not strictly earned in the legal sense. I mean, that's true, but you get my drift, or indeed my grift. We don't want to expend more than we need to as a cost of laundering. It kind of defeats the purpose.
True. So we need to find someone who is amenable to helping us. How are we going to do that?
Well, ideally, we want a business that's been around for a while, that's trusted by its bankers, but maybe financially a bit vulnerable. Best would be to have a business that's been in the same family for a few generations, because the pressure of maintaining the family business might help to tip a previously honest person over the edge if it means they don't end up presiding over its demise.
That sounds an awfully lot like Fowler Oldfield, right?
Well, we'll leave our listeners to decide. For the sake of this podcast, let's not be gold dealers, but let's run a restaurant instead.
A restaurant that still takes in a fair bit of cash.
Exactly.
I've spotted, I think, a potential flaw in this exercise, Ray.
Go on then.
Well, a restaurant makes its profits by buying ingredients at a certain price, turning them into meals, paying people to cook and serve them, and all the other paraphernalia that goes with running a business. So what's left at the end of the week is your profit.
Yep, can't fault that so far.
Okay, but if you shuffle a load of additional cash through the business, there is no accompanying increase in relation to costs. It's all effectively going to be added to the bottom line profit margin.
Now, you've put your finger on it there, Graham. To give a concrete example, if you were turning over £1 million a year and your costs were £750,000 a year, you'd be making a gross profit of £250,000 or 25%.
Yeah, absolutely, you would, yeah.
Now, if you put another £250,000 of criminal funds through your books, your turnover would go up to 1.25 million, but your costs would stay the same. So your profits would double to 500k, and your margin is suddenly 40%.
Yeah, and your tax bill would go up accordingly.
Now, that's an interesting point, and one on which it's worth taking a brief diversion before we move on.
What, tax bills?
Yeah, it's an important question. Do money launderers mind paying tax?
Well, the answer to that is no, because you can't be taxed on criminal funds. So the mere fact of paying tax on money has the effect of making it look clean.
Exactly. It's a badge of honour to a criminal, isn't it, paying tax? However, do money launderers want to pay more tax than is absolutely necessary?
I think that would be no again, Ray.
Precisely. Which means we've got to lose some of those excess profits. That's also going to make our business look more like its profitability is reasonable and more in line with expectations. Our expectations, if we're looking after a restaurant account, are not that its profitability should pretty much double at a time when its revenue isn't increasing at all.
True. And I'm led to believe that HMRC actually do some basic profit margin checking to see whether it's within a range that is normal for restaurants. So that's a really good point. How are we going to do it?
Well, we set up other companies that can provide services to our restaurant, shall we say. And it might be a cab company, which takes staff home late at night. It might be a florist that provides fresh flowers daily. It might even be a training company that trains all the staff on hygiene and health and safety and all the other things that might be required.
Except none of those things actually happen, do they?
No, they don't. It's just a paper trail of invoices to allow you to disperse profits. And meanwhile, all of those florists, taxi firms and training companies can be pretending to spend money with our restaurant as well, which will gladly issue them fabricated bills.
Now, it goes without saying that for us to do this work, we need to control all of those other companies.
We do, but we mustn't be seen to control all of them, because that would give the game away.
And that's why we need proxies. Names that appear on the paperwork instead of us to mask the fact that a huge proportion of the income and outgoings of this business are under common ownership and control.
It's a bit of a giveaway.
Although, as we've seen repeatedly, not always noticed.
Very true. But moving on, now all we have to do in our laundry is have a swathe of such cash-intensive businesses. That might mean nail bars, tanning salons, corner stores, actual laundries, bureau de change or money transfer services, maybe even in a newsagent shop. Right through to upmarket casinos and a whole range of other cash-intensive businesses.
Yes, and then, of course, we take our percentage, which might be, 10 or 15% of the total, and we move the, I'm going to call them in quotes, legitimised funds to their original criminal acquirers.
And depending on the scale of the operation, this may well involve a move to a completely above-board offshore entity.
When you say above board, I think what we mean is one that's been fully due diligenced and accepted as legitimate.
Yeah, because now the funds themselves look legitimate. The handy thing about offshore is that they'll still afford high levels of secrecy. So when those funds return to their point of origin, it's impossible to tell who now owns them.
Yeah. Job done.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's probably enough to take in for the time being. Shall we stop there, Graham?
I think you're probably right, Ray. A lot of information in a relatively short period of time. So next time round, although we've done this a bit already, but shall we go into depth into all the different elements of trade-based money laundering and all that entails?
You mean from the villain's point of view?
It'd be exactly that. We can start setting up global corporate networks and jolly good fun little things.
Well, I'm looking forward to that.